Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
All right. Okay. All right. Solo road trip. Here we go. I better get my map sorted. Chris Woff can't bring himself to do two away games in a row, so here I am yet again. I say it's a solo road trip. That's not necessarily true. I may have some company on the way back, which does remind me to buy some arsenic if service stations sell such a thing. And it's a bit weird to be heading towards the Etihad Stadium with something akin to positivity. Newcastle have got a terrible record there. We know that. I think it's something like 15 consecutive away defeats there. They don't even score goals. But Manchester, so much to answer for, in the words of the Smiths, but a bit less this season. They've already gone to Old Trafford and won. That doesn't happen. They've gone to Arsenal and won. That doesn't really happen. They've gone to Tottenham and won. That doesn't happen. It certainly has never happened before that they've gone to those three grounds and won in the same season. They are on the back of five away wins in succession in the league. Eddie Howe called this a defining period for the team in his press conference on Friday. And so it's a really good test, a defining period. Are Newcastle really at that level, at the elite level? Well, they've shown they can be, and they rouse themselves for these games in a way that they've not necessarily managed to do against some of the smaller clubs. I've been in the away end at Man City a couple of times post-takeover with my brother, and it's been a pretty harrowing experience, but Man City, in relative terms, are in a mess. Could this be another case of Newcastle playing a team like that at a decent time and putting that to bed? Well, we will find out. As you get older, you can't travel anywhere without then promptly telling people how you travelled there. So A1, M62, really awful, horrible days driving, dark, rainy, lights on, windscreen wipers on, very unhappy with Chris at this point. Definitely have lost a bit of my mojo ahead of today's game. Let's see what happens.
For Manchester City. Newcastle United with hopes of coming here and recording a first Premier League win in the Etihad Stadium have got a real problem now. Isak's got it. Here's a chance for Newcastle. Isak! Oh! Isak's shot right-footed from 6 yards, deflected across the face of goal. Manchester City, without their usual zip and style, in a 2-0 lead, and Savinho on the outside, he has looked dangerous. The cutback, hat-trick. Omar Marmoush with a first half hat-trick for Manchester City, and this game after 33 minutes may already be beyond Newcastle United.
It's half-time, and at this point, the only other four words I can give you are Newcastle United Football Club.
Right arm in the air. Here comes the corner, chipped to the near post, headed across the box, turned in at the back stick by James McAtee, the substitute. And Newcastle couldn't deal with the corner kick. Manchester City, in truth, had this game won in the first half.
Right, it's all over. It's 4-0. 3,000 Newcastle United fans came down from the northeast to see that, and it's fair to say that they have not been given a performance worthy of that support. There is an object lesson here, which is never ever expect good or nice things to happen. I'm still digesting it. They just didn't make life difficult for Manchester City in any way, shape or form. It was like they were beaten from the start, couldn't get the ball. When they did, they gave it away, did nothing with it. Just really, really, really meek, really poor. We'll hear from Eddie Howe in a bit, and then I'll give you some more thoughts before driving home.
I expected us to be really competitive today, just starting off the ball in terms of trying to deliver a really competitive, energetic performance. It wasn't there. Then the duels, we were off on our duels. So then it becomes very difficult because they're still the best team in Premier League, maybe the world still for me, in the build-up phase. And it can become a difficult mix if you don't get that first part right. And we didn't today. And sadly, that led to a disappointing performance. I think we have days where we can look far from the team that we are when we're on it. And it's a real frustration for us to be an elite team. You've got to be consistent. You've got to figure out ways to be competitive, even if you're not feeling your best. Certainly today, it looked like a difficult start to the game for us, but then we never responded really in that first half. It was a tough half to watch. I thought we were much better in the second period, but the game was gone.
You said yesterday that this could be a defining period for the team. Obviously, this was not the kind of response that you wanted. Can it be a useful lesson in that respect? Can it be a defining game in the sense of a positive?
Yeah, I think that's what I have to try and create from the game, is that it's a positive moment, because we learn a lot of what we don't want to do, to be honest, in terms of a game, because that's what we've delivered today. A lot of what we don't want: second best in duels, second best physically, not ourselves with the ball. We didn't look a threat today. So we've had games like this before this season. We've always responded pretty well. I think the inconsistency is a worry, and has been sort of there all season. Now we're off the back of winning a lot of games, 12 of our last 15. But still, just looking at the last group of games, we've not been what we want to be.
So I'm walking back to my car. I've got a guest on the way back. How lovely for me. It is loudmouth Luke Edwards from the Daily Telegraph, a man who I like to say is an opinion searching for a subject.
Yep.
What's your opinion of what we've seen today? What's the theme of today?
Misery.
Yeah.
Disgruntlement, frustration, and a little bit of trepidation.
Yeah.
It was really poor from start to finish, and we were talking, certainly at half-time, it's probably one of the worst performances of the Howe era.
It's not like a totally unfamiliar story at the Etihad, but like we've come today sort of thinking, expecting might see something a bit different. One of the themes of this season has been good performances at traditionally bad away grounds. and against big teams, but that was, they just didn't turn up. There was nothing there.
We can't lose the sight of the fact that they still, you know, they are still in having a really good season. But what says to me is that they've become a cup team, and what I mean by that is they are a team that can raise itself for one-off occasions, big occasions, particularly at home. They've reached the Carabao Cup final. The worry is that in the month preceding that cup final, if they look that disinterested and unmotivated again, then as Eddie Howe said tonight, their Premier League season will be over really before mid-March.
Yeah, and they were in a good position in the league, level on points and pretty much everything else with Man City, weren't they? Yeah, let's get in the car. It just feels like this was a wasted opportunity, and those opportunities don't come around at places like Man City very often, do they? But
Howe was angry, you could tell. He's very good at keeping his emotions in check generally, but he warmed up to the task today in his press conference, and I mean, he described it as painful to watch from the sidelines, which is very strong from him. Is it an isolated incident? Everybody will be hoping it's an isolated bad performance. The problem is it's now 3 defeat in 4s, and this team unfortunately are capable of serving up that sort of rubbish.
They are. Yeah, all right, come on, let's get out of here. Well, it's not long after 10 o'clock. I'm just going back to my house. What a long and dispiriting day that was. Not what I anticipated, really. But that's what you get, isn't it? Newcastle United, there you go. And then, just for the record, M62A1.
Haunting, that. Haunting. Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your perpetual Roy Hodgson gif of a Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic FC. I don't know about you, Chris, but that was just the pick-me-up I needed after the weekend was listening to that.
Well, likewise. George very kindly in one way did not reveal why I did not end up going to the Athletic, because I was actually meant to be there. Mm. And I can tell you that the one positive thing about being basically house-ridden with sciatica for the past week is that I didn't have to go to the Etihad, and that George had to go in my stead, so yeah.
Fair play. It sounds less painful.
Well,
exactly.
And I felt better with every goal that went in. My back suddenly felt better that I wasn't actually there and having to witness it. Because there was that part of me thinking, when I did have to pull out from going, you know, this could be the time where, given my record is like 29-3, this could be actually the time Newcastle go win the Etihad and I'm going to miss it. And then when the first goal went in, it's like, no, probably not.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of hope amongst the fan base. Jacob Whitehead's here as well, Jacob, wasn't it? But it was all dashed pretty quickly by Man City.
Pretty dispiriting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You're sort of very dramatically sort of lit, like you're in film noir or something. It feels very appropriate. Mm,
yeah, I'm going to do some digging into what's happened here. I'm sort of a private detective character that I'm playing in this particular podcast. We're going to dig into what went wrong.
So what's your name?
At Man City.
On his trusty sidekick, Waffles.
Waffles, my sidekick. Yeah, exactly.
But what is your name, though? What is your...
D.I. Payne is so clean. It's beautiful.
It doesn't need anything else, does it? You don't need any embellishment on that. It almost writes itself, doesn't it? D.I. Payne, private dick. There we go. Also, we've had a little email. I've got to get through this before we move on and actually start the show properly. Somebody called Paul emailed us and said, I listened to the last pod and could not believe my ears when nobody mentioned Jim Richardson's pronunciation of Chris's name on the Totally Football Show podcast.
Yep, Wednesday night, Arsenal, the team that made a statement just this Sunday against Manchester City, finding no response to a perfect magpie performance, in the words of Newcastle manager Eddie Howe. Another 2-0 victory, 4-0 now on aggregate. Chris Waff will be joining us from Tyneside any minute now.
Chris, James Richardson called you Chris Waff.
He didn't just call me Chris Waff once, he did on multiple occasions, and he has done previously as well, so yeah, he hasn't quite Brilliant. Got the memo.
Not that you've remembered that.
Not that I've remembered that, no. I mean, I have been called far worse, I'll be honest with you, and it does always amuse me how people pronounce my surname, but yes, Chris Waff is there. I don't know how you quite get Waff from it. Most people would say War as an alternative to Waff, but yeah, Waff, as in very Chris. Boris Johnson-esque, unfortunately.
I'm old enough to remember the Chris Wow days as well.
Chris Wow,
absolutely. So if anything happens to James Richards in the next few weeks, you will be perp number one, Chris, on my list of people I need to go and interview about it.
I'm just not going to reveal what's going to happen over the course of the next few years. Just wait and see what happens.
Watch your back, James Richardson. That's all we'll say.
Chris needs to mind his to do any of the sort.
Right then, on to that Man City game. Yes, an absolute house of horrors, wasn't it? Let's talk about the lineup, Chris. Martin Dubravka, is he officially number one now?
I don't think so. It felt a big call in the sense that Nick Pope had come back against Birmingham and had performed pretty well in terms of made a couple of decent saves. But Dubravka had not done anything really to warrant being dropped. He'd performed very well, really, over the course of the sort of 14 games or so that he'd been in goal. And I think that you also have that fresh dimension of the ability that Newcastle can potentially play it out from the back a little bit more on the floor. But on the evidence of what happened on Saturday, and I'm not of the opinion, as maybe some others are, of really digging Dubravka out for the goals that were conceded, but would a goal, is he as good a shot stopper as Nick Pope? I don't believe that he is. Now, you can then have a wider argument about whether shot stopping alone should bring a goalkeeper back, whether Nick Pope would have come out and swept maybe a couple of the opportunities Man City had. That's yeah, open for debate. But I just think in terms of someone who makes Newcastle more solid, I do think that Nick Pope will, in the not-too-distant future, be back in goal, whether that's against Nottingham Forest or beyond. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that the likelihood is that Pope will return soon enough.
Yeah, that's the only thing I was going to ask, was really just on the first goal, whether you thought that Pope as a sweeper would have got there. I sort of rewatched it earlier today and thought it was very much on the edge of sweeper territory.
Yeah.
I just sort of wondered what you guys made of it.
I mean, that's one of the weaknesses I always think with Dubravka, is that if you actually watch it, and this is not me blaming Dubravka for the goal, but actually he does get himself in unusual positions when the ball's there. Like, he's sort of not really anywhere and doesn't
sometimes
really affect.
He's kind of hesitant, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think maybe sometimes he's a little bit scared to overcommit.
Yeah, the prime example was against Nottingham Forest when Alanga sort of slotted away under a City ground last season. But yeah, that's not to dig Dubravka. I don't think he was at fault for the goal, but equally, I just think that's a few of those situations where he's sort of seen it's not really his natural game, and he just ends up not really in the correct position. But yeah, that felt like a sort of big call that Howe made, because last season, towards the back end of last season, when Nick Pope was fit, Howe waited and didn't bring him in for that Man United game midweek at the back end of the season, yeah, and then did for the final match at Brentford. But the damage was already done in terms of what subsequently happened. Not that it was Dubravka's fault that Newcastle didn't win the game at Man United, but he didn't. I think there was almost a feeling internally at Newcastle that maybe we were too hesitant and should have brought him back sooner. Now, in terms of the lineup in general as well, the rest of the lineup, you looked at it and thought, I don't think there were many people who would have really dramatically changed the 11 as it was. There was only one change from the Arsenal win, and that was partly injury-enforced because Sven Botman was unavailable, so that meant that rather than stick with the back three as it was and bring in Emile Kraft instead, Howe brought in Joe Willock, who performed in midfield, albeit rather than left-sided forward, where he had performed and scored twice at Birmingham. But I don't think when the lineup actually came out, at least from what I saw and how I felt, I don't think there was loads of people thinking that's totally the wrong 11 he's picked there.
No, not necessarily. Harvey Barnes returned as well, Jacob. It's good to have him back. It'll be interesting to see what he can offer us for the rest of the season.
Yeah, Harvey Barnes, I always find such an interesting player, because you don't see him do an absolute ton in terms of possession, but he just pops up with those goals and assists. And I think it's especially good for a player like Anthony Gordon, who can have these real, real heights and then sometimes feel as if he can drift through games. So when you have a player who you know is going to give you a decent output per game, just keep Gordon honest as well as have Barnes as that option off the bench. It's really just good for Newcastle's depth options.
Yeah, I think part of the problem, Chris, that a lot of people seem to be saying is that when we are bad, we look really, really bad, don't we?
Yeah, I think that's an understatement.
Shit was the word I was going to use, but I censored myself ever so slightly. But
I think Ollie might have to censor that as well, unfortunately, in the podcast. But what felt so stark about Saturday, and George mentioned it in his sort of package earlier on, is that Newcastle went to the Etihad with something bordering upon some sort of expectation, which is not,
it's
not
what kills you, Chris.
Yet. 15 defeats in a row, never won at the Etihad in the league, only ever won there once in the League Cup. I've only ever seen them lose there. It felt like this was a bit of an opportunity. And what was also different is, a lot of people have sort of, that when they talk about the performances dropping off, they're lumping this in with West Ham, Brentford,
Bournemouth
yeah. with Fulham. And I think what's different, the Brentford one, I actually thought for 45 minutes Newcastle were good. They collapsed in that second half after I'd been there, but slightly different to them in that sense. And also, most of those matches have been against middle or lower half teams who you'd expect Newcastle to be going in as favourites.
Yeah.
Their record against the so-called Big Six this season before Saturday was played 10 in all competitions, only lost one. I think they'd won six of them. They've beaten Arsenal three times, the only domestic team to have beaten Arsenal aside from Man United on penalties since October. They have drawn with Manchester. They drew Manchester City at St James's, arguably could have won that.
Yeah, of course.
They drew with Liverpool at St James's, arguably could have won that. They really have raised their levels against the best teams, and that's when you don't necessarily fear for them. Yet they go to Man City, who themselves have been in a vulnerable position. And have thrown away a lot of leads,
yeah.
have really struggled home and away, although more away, but home and away, and yet they capitulated in the way that they did. And it was, I just found it strange the way that Newcastle went about it. The players have rightly been dug out by the manager and by a lot of others, but I also thought the setup was wrong in the sense that quite quickly came unstuck, or if the setup was not how Howe intended them to play, then there's been a breakdown in both communication with the players and them enacting what Howe wanted them to do. Because Newcastle sat off to begin with, pressed sort of in the opposition off, but sat off. In the first 8 minutes, they did not complete a pass. Now, there's a difference between going there and not wanting to go too gung-ho or sort of let... But that was just... It was basically Newcastle just allowed Man City to control the ball, gain confidence in almost having a lot of the ball and doing stuff with it, and almost tiring themselves out by a sort of intermittent press at certain points when the ball went at the opposition half, but then also sitting back. And I just couldn't quite... The word that's come about that a lot of people have used, which you've not associated with Newcastle United this season, at times you did last season because they were tired, is passive. And I did think they were passive.
I think they weren't helped by just the sheer look of some of the goals as well. Like, they looked bad.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, whether it's the first goal and it's a Trippier one-on-one, or I mean, for me it is in the second goal when there's those three midfield players all in about 2 square meters just utterly split apart as the ball went to Gundogan, and it's just an easy pass through, and then how passive Hall was for the third. Clearly it's never good to concede a goal, but when they look just so visibly odd, I'm going to say it was like players weren't in the right places, that's when these sorts of questions and angst starts to arise.
Yeah, and I mean, well, you mentioned, sorry, just for the first goal, I'm not going to come on to a second, but it's like that idea that Newcastle don't actually complete a pass for 8 minutes, and yet there's a huge gap, which Haaland's already run into behind the defence, and then obviously a huge, Trippier misjudges it, but there's like a huge gap all over the pitch, so it's not like, it's both passive, but also at the same time, Newcastle are sort of pressing up the pitch, but not in a sort of full way as to, it was just weird.
I didn't understand some of the decision-making of the two centre-backs, to be honest, especially on that first goal. I thought they were far too high.
Well, but I think it was, I think the plan was similar to Arsenal, was man for man. That was the idea.
Him, yeah.
It was to, but, to rush man to man.
We know Edison can knock that long ball. We know he can do it. We've seen him do it umpteen times throughout the season. We know he's got it, and we know that if those two centre-backs are too high, they don't have the pace to recover as well. So, you know, you can blame Kieran Trippier for kind of letting the ball go the way he did, but at the same time, he should never really have been put in that position as far as I'm concerned. But there we go. There was a lot of stats went up in smoke. A lot of records went up in smoke, Jacob. The away wins run, Alexander Isak's away goals run, and Eddie Howe's Newcastle United had not previously conceded 3 goals in a half. It's a good way just to get the slate clean, isn't it? Just get the chalk off the board and start again. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, all the burning of Chris's notes, which he must have had to do. It must have looked as if a new Pope had been elected or something, like quite the bonfire.
Can you burn a Google Doc?
You can try.
Printers exist.
If you know the right people on the dark web, Chris, I'm sure you could burn a Google Doc. You're dressed like a hacker today, Chris. Anyway, what's going on with this hood? What are you doing?
Oh, that's, yeah, my eyes are very sensitive to light. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I've got a lot of ailments at the moment.
Okay, fair play. Let's move on.
It's been a roller coaster.
Newcastle, of course. Eddie Howe's anger, Chris, as George mentioned in his little report there, and also Bruno Guimaraes' post-match interview with the club media. There was some stark comments there, wasn't there?
Yeah, I had to listen to Bruno's interview several times because he said, I thought he'd said the word shambles, but then I was thinking, does he know what shambles means? So I kept rewinding and thinking, has he actually said that? And he did, yeah, that was how he described it. He talked about Newcastle being lazy, about not being at it, and he said shambles. And then how basically called out his players. He talked about going back to basics, which is very similar to after the Fulham defeat away in September, when he didn't actually say it in as many words, but basically was implying Newcastle didn't run enough, they didn't put the effort in, they didn't communicate well enough, they didn't work as a team. And that's basically the way that he saw. Saturday he was furious. I know he's still being furious. Him and the coaching staff remain so. There's been some harsh words at the training ground, and there will continue to be. I think that there could be decisions made ahead of this weekend as well. We talked about, would it be Dubravka and Pope? The issue Howe has is that he doesn't really have that much depth, but I still think he may feel he might have to make a call or two to sort of change things up a little bit. And you saw that he hooked Willock and Trippier at half time, which is not something he does particularly often. And he was asked, was that to do with injuries? And he just said no, which was just blunt. He wasn't even trying to mask the fact. And I mean, Trippier was brilliant against Arsenal. Yeah, it just looked so exposed beyond just the goal. I thought he struggled. It was actually, it's in hindsight, and this is a hindsight opinion, but I just thought it was a strange decision given Man City's potential pace coming in behind in the way that they may attack, that Livermore didn't necessarily come in because it didn't feel like a game that would necessarily suit Trippier, sort of switching between a back three and a back. He was almost a right-sided centre-back at times. And I'll say that the setup either maybe wasn't the best idea in terms of what it was meant to be, but also, even if it was theoretically a decent idea, it wasn't communicated well enough to the players, or they didn't execute it in the way it was meant to. I understand Howe's anger, because it does feel, as he basically admitted, that this group of players blows hot and cold.
Yeah.
And as we said before, when they blow hot, they can blow anyone away, as they certainly at St. James's Park, but also at St. James's Park, they put in some very insipid performances recently. Motivation-wise, some of those elite players, I think, you look at Isak, who was anonymous. That's not just taking out him. Newcastle didn't get
involved in the game at all.
But Isak, he was anonymous. Was sort of almost seemed to be going through the motions at times. Body language didn't look brilliant. Anthony Gordon, whether he's fully fit, I think is questionable because he didn't look necessarily it. But again, you've had this quite often this season. I thought Bruno in the first half was awful. He eventually got taken off midway through the second half, but he sort of went missing. Tonali's worst game in a long, long time. The midfield was completely bypassed. Willock was hooked. Potentially justifiably, but I also think that other players could have been. You could have changed so many of that lineup. Lewis Hall really struggled. The centre back struggled. I don't think anyone in that starting 11 came out with any credit whatsoever.
There was a few sort of questions about attitude and application and stuff like that, Jacob. One of the things that Newcastle have been decent at, though, is coming back from these kind of knocks through the season. They have responded occasionally when they've been down, after the Bournemouth game, after the Fulham game. They've kind of tried to turn it around and they've come out with a bit of fresh vigour when they've played again. We're hoping that they'll be able to do the same.
Yeah, I think Chris made a really good point in the Q&A yesterday, when he was talking about staleness being an issue behind some of Newcastle's sort of flat performances, in that when players aren't getting pushed from behind them, they know they're fairly assured of a starting spot, but they won't perform up to their levels. They'll go through the motions a bit more. And clearly, when you have something like that, there's a need for a reaction. Like, Eddie Howe is the bad cop in the training ground.
He'll demand it, though, won't he? He will demand it.
Yeah, and I mean, it effectively forces into an ultimatum position and it gives players something to play for. I mean, like, yes, we talk about the shadow of a cup final and it's an annoying thing and it's a distraction, but it can also be a motivator. No player's not going to want to be in the starting 11 for that.
Yeah.
But if they don't buck their ideas up, Eddie Howe can tell them, you're not going to be in it. I think everyone was aware. Well, it was spoken about beforehand about how the weekend was a big game for Champions League qualification. And people said that. Was it truly taken in as that? I don't know, but with Nottingham Forest at the weekend, it crystallises the importance of that. And so there's a few more reasons why Newcastle will be able to almost mentally, psychologically turn it around in short notice.
Chris, does anybody come out of that game with any kind of credit at all? Lewis Miley's one of the names that people have been speaking about online since he came on and made us look a bit fresher in that second half. And he has sort of risen up that midfield pecking order as well.
I think Miley's the closest to anyone who does. I mean, I thought that how referencing Miley repeatedly in his post-match interviews was both justified to a certain extent, but I also think it was him making a further point that this 18-year-old lad, I put him on, and he runs around more than the rest of you. He put himself about more than the rest of you. He was in there. And I thought he was all right when he came on in a very difficult game situation. Newcastle already 3-0 down. I didn't think he was necessarily brilliant, but I didn't think anyway. It was just that relative to, in terms of those fundamentals that we were speaking about before, the ability to...
He's not
to
bringing
around.
Him on to change the game, though, is he, no. Chris? He's not bringing him on but, and saying, go and get us something. So he's saying, you know...
No, but it says both a lot
he's
about...
He's applying himself and he's doing his job.
Exactly. It says both a lot about how expect him to be able to do, but also it says a lot about... Still, even though we haven't seen that much of Lewis Miley this season, largely because of injury, but then slowly being reintegrated back in the team, it tells you a heck of a lot as well as to how much Howe does trust him. Even in those scenarios, I'll put him in the 3-0 game at the Etihad at half-time, and I'll throw him in there. And he came on ahead of Sean Longstaff. He is seemingly ahead of Longstaff in the midfield pecking order. Now, that's liable to change in the sense that the Newcastle may need different things, horses for courses, if you want, for different matches and the like. But in terms of the future, Lewis Miley is very much Newcastle's future, and it'll be interesting to see if he does come into the lineup this weekend against Forest, because he probably justifies it on the basis of, I think he could replace any of the midfield three, and he would be worthy of it, beyond just Joe Willock was the one who was hooked. But I think that on the evidence just of Saturday, not in a wider context, but just of the performance on Saturday, you could remove any of the three of them. So beyond that, not really. Newcastle did get better to a degree in the second half, but that's from absolutely abysmal to just abysmal, really. And Man City sort of led off a little bit. There was no point where you really thought Newcastle are going to come back into this. And against a side who have thrown away 3-goal leads against Feyenoord, and it was a Feyenoord I think they did in the Champions League. This is a Man City side who are still being so vulnerable. They didn't look vulnerable against Newcastle. Now, I will mention, as so many others have, that, Man City went and spent $170 million or whatever it was during the January window, and Newcastle have not strengthened the first 11 for three successive windows. That staleness point that Jacob mentions, these are all valid questions to raise, but I don't think that excuses that performance. If it was down to a lack of quality, that they've been undone by quality, you'd say, fair enough to a certain degree. But when it just felt like more than that, and the fact that Newcastle, you speak to people inside the club and they basically say, there's no excuse for this. Newcastle had a weak build-up, well, more than a weak build-up really for a lot of those players. Some of them didn't even feature against Birmingham in the cup. They shouldn't have been fatigued. They had full time to work on the game plan. Man City have had other matches on their mind. And yet Newcastle went and delivered that. And I thought that it was, very, very disappointing.
Absolutely. Right then, let's move on. We'll talk about that game against Nottingham Forest. Sunday, 2:00. This is massive now, Jacob, isn't it? This is a big game of football. We spoke about the potential Champions League qualification, and Forest are still right up there, and they don't look to be flagging off.
Yeah, no signs of dropping off. And I know that Newcastle fans, two seasons ago in the chasing of the Champions League, would also sort of been similarly frustrated at suggestions that they will come back towards the rest, and there was no actual sign of that happening. Forest are really defensively sound. That's going to be a mission for Newcastle to break it down. At the same time, speaking to Forest fans today, they pointed out that Newcastle, they say, were the best team to visit the City Ground this season when they won earlier in the year. So clearly Newcastle do know what to do, but then I think you guys will remember the Chris Wood hat-trick on a festive season last year.
Still got PTSD because of that, mate. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, can you have a sort of, this is going a bit too football cliches, but can you have a Champions League six-pointer? Because I suppose that's really what it is.
Yeah.
Chelsea are in a bad run of form. City look to be improving. It looks as if the top five are going to qualify, but Newcastle at the moment look as if they are on the outside of that. You know, it's this sort of game which you really, really have to win, especially with stuff likely to get more difficult around the Carabao final.
Chris, Newcastle have won 12 in the last 15 games, but obviously they've lost 3 of the last 4 in the league.
The one victory in those 4 as well was away at Southampton, which sort of barely counts.
Doesn't
as well,
count,
I suppose,
does it?
In terms of, yeah.
Just because you won on the South Coast, it still counts.
Fair comment, yeah. I think there has to be a reaction. Now, whether that's enough, because the dangerous element for this game, in my opinion, is that Forest will come and look to counter-attack.
Yeah.
Which is where Newcastle have been exploited in other matches. And that sort of suits Forest. Newcastle need to start well, they need to get ahead and then force Forest to come out almost a little bit, I think. And as you say, that match on Boxing Day in 2023, that was exactly what happened, that Newcastle actually started all right, and then, yeah. I mean, Chris Wood, some of the finishes were just staggering.
But the
Newcastle's high line was exposed, the way they got in behind, Elanga terrorised them. And there were sort of moments where he threatened to do that in the match at the City Ground in the first half earlier this season. Newcastle obviously took control and were brilliant during the second half, and that was because they got ahead, and then again it was Forest had to come out a little bit and Newcastle could expose them. So that's the issue is, and this is the frustration Eddie Howe is, nobody can say with any certainty which Newcastle will show up. And a lot of people are now talking about, well, on Newcastle just thinking about the Carabao Cup final. We haven't really mentioned it up to this stage, but obviously the Carabao Cup final, players who want to be in that side or squad, at least as Jacob was mentioning earlier. But Newcastle can't afford to go into it having dropped off in form. That's what happened 2 years ago. A lot has been made of the emotional element of why they lost 2 years ago, and I'm sure that contributed, and that may have even contributed to the difficult run they had in the Premier League either side of it last time. But as of yet, it doesn't feel like they've learned from that. They've become almost a cup side. As in the cup games, they've been brilliant or found a way to win, whereas in the Premier League, they've found a way over the last four matches to put themselves in difficult situations. Even at Southampton, they fell behind. So I am a little bit concerned going into Sunday.
Yeah.
But Newcastle could go and blow Forest away. They are capable of doing that, but they are also capable of getting blown away themselves, and that's what is so exasperating right now.
It's interesting for Howe. Does he, in a way, take the risk of blowing up his team to make a sort of message from the weekend and have the danger of playing potentially a bit of a weaker team but having a big psychological boost, I guess, which comes with that? Or does he stick with his quote-unquote strongest 11, but then the risk of that is you possibly legitimise the sort of performance which there was last weekend? And I don't know what I do, but that's effectively what he's going to be stuck in his dark room with Jason Tindall working out.
Yes, absolutely. And Chris Wood and Elliot Anderson could be headed for the Champions League if Newcastle don't step up and stop them. And don't forget Matt Sells, of course. Chris, we always forget Matt Sells, don't we? The Opta supercomputer, as of the 17th of February, has predicted that 100% Liverpool will finish in the top four and top five. Arsenal at 99.9% for the top four and 100% for the top five. Man City 78.1% for the top four and 89.9% for the top five. Nottingham Forest, 40% chance of finishing in the top four and a 61.6% chance of finishing in the top five. Newcastle, meanwhile, are down on 16.8% chance for the top four and a 33% chance of the top five. Now, things can change really quickly, can't they, in this league? And it takes a little run of wins or losses for teams to drop in and out of those favourable positions. But those numbers they're quite worrying, really, aren't they?
That was dead relaxing. That's like a shipping forecast. Newcastle United blowing westward.
Yes, 16.8% chance.
Yeah, I mean, I never actually know what these statistics really mean.
It's a supercomputer, Chris.
Well, exactly. It's right. Yeah. But there was that. If Newcastle win this weekend, then suddenly they flip massively as well, exactly, which I realise is because there'll be different points. But it's, yeah, I mean, that's what was damaging at the weekend, was because Newcastle lost to a potential, well, a rival for those positions, and then suddenly your chances do massively change. And given the run that Newcastle have coming up, if they don't get some positive results against Forest and then Liverpool in these next couple of matches, then that is worrying, because that is them losing further ground, whereas other teams are picking up, even if Chelsea are not one of them. Just to pick up on Matt Sells, I refuse to believe that is the same goalkeeper. It was at Newcastle United. His highlights reel this season has been staggering, really, relative to it. But I suppose he is, well, 9 or 10 years on from when he was at Newcastle and has clearly grown significantly as a goalkeeper. But yeah, not the same player.
I have to say, I do love the term supercomputer as well, as if it's some warehouse somewhere with banks of servers and blinking lights and stuff happening, and it's not just a bloke with a laptop at a desk. I love the idea that it's a giant supercomputer, like Optimus Prime thing, you know.
I guess I can pull behind the curtain of this. I was chatting to Duncan Alexander in the office, ex of Opta, currently an editor at The Athletic, who revealed or claimed that he was the inventor of the term supercomputer.
Is that right?
And talking about it in media releases, and he did it because it was a bit of fun.
Well, there you go.
And it stuck, and yeah.
I like it.
Big claim.
It's also quite fun to hear people from Sunderland say that as well, but we'll not get into that. Jacob, we mentioned him before, but Elliot Anderson's having a fantastic season for Forest. He's become a mainstay of their midfield. Newcastle fans have got to look at that with a bit of a bit of sadness that he's gone there and done so well.
Yep, I'm writing about him for the end of the week in a piece which will look at sort of how he got to Forest, the sort of panic at the end, his disappointment, but also just how well he's playing at Forest. He's playing in a new role there. He's a number six rather than playing as an eight or a winger. You know, and who say he might not be in the England squads coming up under Tuchel in the coming months.
Absolutely.
It's just real. I mean, I know that you'll be able to speak just better than me, but as much as there is disappointment that it's not coming in black and white, there must also be an ounce of pride in seeing him do so well, given the fact it's not his. 100%. He didn't want to leave. And seeing him actually realising what Newcastle fans have known has been high potential for a while, there must be, a bittersweetness.
Yeah, I think a lot of Newcastle fans understand what the situation was, and they don't, you know, they don't have any problem with Elliot Anderson, and what he's doing is impressive, and there is pride there for him. I hope he does brilliantly, but I'd love to see him in an England squad one day. I think he might deserve it based on his performances this season.
Come on, you Maggies.
Chris, FA Cup. We had the draw for that. A home draw, Brighton. No pushovers, as Chelsea recently found. It's going to be a difficult one, that, but a nice home draw.
Yeah, I think in terms of Newcastle just getting a home draw was important. I mean, I did say earlier on that at home in the league that they have struggled recently, but their cup record at St James's is very, very good over the last 18 months, 2 years. So I don't think they could have asked for much more. Brighton, Newcastle did lose to it at St James earlier in the season, but again, that was a bit of an aberration in the sense that for an hour, I thought that, I mean, they just couldn't score, really. Yeah. That was that Brighton had one chance in the first half and took it, and then Newcastle, they fell away in the last half an hour, but it was slightly different to some of those other defeats. So I think, yeah, that is kind of a draw in the sense that you just won a home match, really. So yeah. I think, yeah, they can't really complain about that.
Yankuba Minter got a couple of goals against Chelsea as well. I'm going to go over to our Yankuba Minter correspondent, Jacob Whitehead. Jacob, he's going to score, isn't he? That's what's going to happen there.
Oh, quite possibly, to be honest. I mean, a few things are combining. Firstly, I mean, like Newcastle's high line, Minter behind that's dangerous. He saw some of Lewis Hall's defending against the right winger, which was slightly iffy for Marmoush's third. And of course, there's just, you know, the inevitability of fate, which just means that this sort of thing will happen. I think it's quite interesting to see what his reception will be, in the sense that I actually think Minter's playing style is a little bit like Gordon's was when he really annoyed Newcastle fans playing for Everton.
Well, Jacob, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying he works really hard out of possession, isn't afraid to back down, and likes to sprint and be annoying, and isn't. He's the sort who might give you a little nudge towards an advertising hoarding.
Oh, fair play, fair play. We have to mention as well, Chris, Cup final tickets are now on sale, and they're working their way through those priority pots for season ticket holders and members and all the rest of it.
Yeah, they've been on sale since the middle of last week. They are just about all gone, I believe. I mean, the club obviously haven't confirmed that it has made it down to the last couple of pots, but I think there'll be very few. I think there's been a pretty good take-up, so as you would expect. So, I think they'll sell out pretty quickly.
Fair play. Tickets also available for the Lasses game against Sunderland at St James's Park on March 23rd. So get on the website and have a look at that. It would be great to get a massive crowd for that one. No senior game for the Lasses this week, and it's an international week. But congratulations on call-ups to Lois Joel for Wales, Emily Murphy for the Republic of Ireland, and a first for Freya Gregory for Scotland. Ava Chapman, hat-trick in a 6-0 win for the under-21s v Morpeth in the Northumberland Women's Cup. It was a bit of a high.
Yeah, I mean, firstly on the international call-ups, quite a nice collection. Feels a bit like a Six Nations sort of game with all of the different nations represented. but Ava Chapman's is also really exciting. She's a girlhood Newcastle fan, season ticket, expressed her disappointment to miss the Bromley game to make her debut against Nottingham Forest last month for the first team. And so a hat-trick for the under-21s means that Newcastle have an option moving forward, I mean, next season and beyond, which they can actually properly hang their hat on. Having an academy sort of refills itself It shows that they're able to attract talent from across the Northeast, especially with such competition in such a talented area from the likes of Durham Women, who had new investment this week, and also Sunderland.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, exciting going forward.
Lovely stuff. Right then, a couple of little things to get through before we finish off. Here's an email from James. Great podcast, giving me faith, comfort and hope with Newcastle, which is easier some weeks than others. Quick question, why, when I speak to any Liverpool fan, do they now think they are signing Alexander Isak? I was sick of smug Arsenal fans, but to have Liverpool fans doing it now is even worse. Thanks, James. Chris, Liverpool fans seem to think they're getting Alexander Isak.
Well, I think Jamie Carragher's contributed to this, because I know that some Newcastle fans feel that Sky Sports have a sort of general campaign almost, or like an underlying campaign to try and get Alexander Isak a move elsewhere. I mean, I'm sure Liverpool do admire him, because why wouldn't you, as any other club? The best major clubs in the world. There were very few players who were going to improve that Liverpool side, but Alexander Isak would be one of them. But just as with Arsenal, A, can they afford him? B, Newcastle have him tied down for another 3 years, and will look to, almost certainly look to try and bring him to talks towards the end of the season to try and extend that further. If Newcastle also get in the Champions League, they'll be in a strong position in that regard. So yes, I wouldn't worry too much about Liverpool fans telling you that yet. I'm not categorically ruling out that he would ever go there, but I can't
go to Liverpool, Chris,
right now that he will be.
Have you heard somebody with a Scouse accent say Alexander Isak? It sounds like they're chewing on tinfoil. It's horrible. They can't possibly sign him. It's not going to work.
And that is exactly the reason why he shouldn't be signed.
That's the only reason, exactly.
I do just sometimes feel with this whole conversation, it's important to remember that, one, this is the price of success. If he was crap, this wouldn't be happening. And number two, I do just think that Newcastle opened the door to this a bit by what happened with Chelsea during the summer. I mean, I know that their intentions have changed now. They don't want to sell him. But when you have to offer your best players out for PSR, you can't really put the toothpaste back in the tube. This is sort of the deal they made, was that this discourse is just going to continue.
While I agree with your point, just to clarify, Newcastle did not offer out Alexander Isak. They got an inquiry from Chelsea, and he was the one player who, at least certain people at the club, were adamant would never be sold.
Well, there
but
we go.
Still, the point is relevant, that Newcastle basically, it looked like they'd put everyone up for sale and were so desperate that they could potentially go. So,
and we also have to say, thanks to quite a few of you who pointed out that Jacob Murphy does have a song, although we don't hear it at games all that much, do we? Chris, do you know the song?
I would probably recognise it if you sang it to me, but I can't immediately recall it.
I can't remember it either.
Is it to the tune of Lady Gaga?
Oh, I'm your biggest fan. Jacob Murphy! Yeah, that's the one. The version of it I heard was, I'm your biggest fan, your mum's from the streets of Burtley, Jacob Murphy. That's the version I heard.
Well, I think she is from Burtley.
She
so
is,
yeah. So, I mean, Jacob just making popular culture references are not particularly helpful for me in terms of when he said...
It's 15 years ago, Chris.
Well,
you were 16 when this song came out. You're in your prime.
That to me is popular culture. God. Yeah, exactly, but yeah.
Right, that's about it. Pod on the Tyne at theathletic.com. If you've got anything to say or ask, give us a shout. There's going to be two shows next week. We will pod astride that midweek trip to Anfield. That sounds horrible, that, doesn't it? Who's wrote that in the run order? It's disgusting. Stride. It's going to be a fun week for you, Chris Woff, writing about APT as well.
Oh, yes, another acronym for you there. Associated Party Transactions.
All the good gigs,
almost,
don't you, Chris?
Almost as fun as all PSR, yeah. So on Friday, the ruling came out that basically... Some rules, the APT rules, which were brought in 3 weeks after Newcastle United's takeover in 2021, which tried to limit or at least make fair market value calculations for any associated party transactions, they are called. So basically, if PIF largely are involved in any sponsorship of Newcastle, which obviously they are with Seller and Noon and others, those rules have been for now declared null and void. Now I'm going to be writing about theoretically what that means for Newcastle. The rule obviously only came out on Friday, but sort of explain that, because there's been a lot of questions surrounding it and whether it suddenly means that Newcastle can spend a heck of a lot more money. Now I wouldn't necessarily get yourself excited too soon, but theoretically it probably is a positive for Newcastle. And I just wanted to also give a little shout out to George, who's not on the podcast today, because he is interviewing a modern day cult hero of Newcastle United, but I will not reveal who. But hopefully, in the coming weeks, we will find out about that, and it should be a very exciting interview. In terms of, I think there should be some amusing parts to it.
I will look forward to finding out all about that. And now we've got to say happy birthday to Sir Bobby Robson as well. Bless him. Right then, that's it. Thank you very much, Jacob, for your time.
Cheers, enjoyed that, thank you. Don't want to piss on Chris's chips, but I've also been on the Athletic podcast today talking about APT and bring up Newcastle a few times. So if you would like your Newcastle APT intro in a different digestible form, there's another option.
And Jacob probably understands it more than me, so...
Yeah, fair point.
Oh, Matt Slater did all the legwork.
He always does, though. Every time he came on this show, he always did the legwork.
Like a tandem bike, and he's on the front, and he's steering and doing most of the pedalling, and I'm sort of got my binoculars out and I'm bird spotting, that sort of vibe.
Excellent. Thanks very much for your time, Chris.
You're very welcome. I just wanted to end by referring back to Eddie Howe's pre-match press conference on Friday when I had asked him about... I spoke about Newcastle. I like the question. I basically started by saying, oh yeah, Newcastle's record the Etihad is, you know, is appalling. Your record at the Etihad isn't brilliant. And he sort of he started laughing and said, that's an understatement. And then it was like a pause for a couple of seconds. He said, thanks, Chris. And I was like, well... He basically then went on to say he's tried everything and to no avail as of yet. And unfortunately, after another weekend, that remains the case. So... yes, Eddie Howe still needs to find a solution.
Might just have to write it off until Pep Guardiola leaves and then try again. Fair play. Yeah. Right then, thank you very much everybody out there for listening as well. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, I hope you have a good week. We shall speak to you very soon. Goodbye.
Well, Chris Wolf, you really missed out because on this day of all days, guess what the pre-match meal was in the press room? That's right, it was giant pigs in blankets.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Moro Casino. Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide children's marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide children's marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.